sometimes you have a bad day. And even in your bad day, you can still give your best. And so, and what does that look like? It may mean that today my best is 80%. Okay, fine. Give your 80%. If it's 80% every day, then we need to have a conversation. But whatever it is today, give your best.
Hey, it's Nikki Llewellyn Gregory, and you're on Gut Plus Science. You're in for a fast-paced, storytelling, action item-rich leadership growth experience. I hope you make this podcast a habit. I consider it a leadership mentoring tool. Learning together makes us better together, and that is how we change the world around us. Let's get to it. Hey, Gut Plus Science listeners, it's Nikki, and today Matt Lesser joins me to share the three pillars of a flourishing organization. These are the pillars that help solve the big people challenges that many of us face as leaders, and these same three pillars unleash the greatness within the people, ultimately the organizations we lead. That's big. And I can't wait to get to it. So Matt, welcome to Gut Plus Science. You've spent 25 years building and working inside of organizations. And early in your leadership journey, you were wrestling with feelings of being overwhelmed. What was the tipping point learning there that helped you to make a transition from that overwhelmed place?
First, Nikki, thanks for having me on the show. I've really been looking forward to our conversation, so I'm honored. Early in my career, so I grew up in a family business. So really the only thing I ever knew entering into college was business. So I went to college and studied business, came out of college and intended to get in some kind of business, but not necessarily our family's business. But I needed a job. And so I worked there, did that for about a year and a half, went in to resign to my dad and basically just said, Dad, one of us needs to go. It's probably not going to be you. You own the stock. So I'm leaving. And he actually flipped it on me and he left. And so here I was, 24 at the time, and I was signing president to documents and checks and feeling really good about that. And unfortunately, then reality settled in. And over the course of the first 90 days of me at the helm, I uncovered problem after problem after problem. I won't get into it here, but what that ultimately led to was I spiraled into a very deep and clinical and eventually a suicidal depression. At the pit of that, at my darkest hour, is literally where miracle after miracle after miracle just happened. They didn't just happen. I mean, they happened in, they were orchestrated, I should say. And so as a result of that, I got some much needed help emotionally, psychologically, relationally, and obviously with the business. And so as I began to get healthy and come out of that, the tipping point for me, the way that I'm just wired, the way that I'm created, is I'm wired to be more a go-getter, do it yourself, bust through the walls, get it done. And I don't necessarily think about doing it with people. I think about doing it myself. And so what this taught me early on in my life at a much needed time, and I'm so grateful actually that I went through this. People ask me a lot, you know, if you had to do it over again, would you do it? I said, absolutely, because it taught me what I'm about to share with you. And it taught me this, two things. I need God and I need others. I cannot do life alone. Not that I don't want to, I cannot do life alone. And that turned into now, I don't want to do life alone. I want to do it with other people. And so that was the big lesson learned in that experience. There were many others, but those were probably the top two.
You know, that is a story like that. Wow, what an opening story. And I know I was so excited to dig right into the three pillars, right? But just to unpack for a minute, you know, the power of embracing the lessons, the experiences that we have to be able to learn, and then we cherish those, you know, as the things that help us to, kind of gets me emotional actually. So being super excited to just jump right in, I'm similar wired to you, Matt, in that we want to just go for those three pillars, you know, and understand like, how do we overcome the problems and how do we get this stuff done? I'm also wired in a way that, let's just go get it done. And I've got the strengths and learning that it's so important to bring others along. I really, that's very touching. The bigger touching thing here is embracing the crappy times, you know, the stories that we live through that, and the thing is live through, to then be able to ripple effect on other people is really powerful. And we could do a whole episode on that. But just to say, like, where you were when you were 24 years old and that very, very hard lesson learned that then you get to take and help other people with. And it really helps you to connect with people. It helps me to connect with people. And I just want to stop there for just a second and talk about, as a leader, this is a leadership podcast, as a leader, the power of being vulnerable and sharing those things, those challenging times, and embracing those challenging times really helps us to connect with people to be able to probably do those three pillars better. So I just wanted to touch on that for a second before we go further. The process and experience of you sharing your story, how would you advise other leaders to do that?
Great question. And the one thing that I would advise, and I do advise other leaders, is share it. Just share your story. In fact, when I am hired by an organization, especially a leadership team, to come in and consult with them, oftentimes my first exercise that I will do with them is I'll get them in a room. I try to get them off campus if at all possible, but if I can't, just a conference room and basically just say, okay, we're going to spend however long it takes for all of you to share your stories. And I don't mean the Cliff's Notes versions. If you don't know the short version, I mean the full-on version. Let people know your story. And if they need help with the structure or framework, I'll provide that. And I'll have the lead leader, usually the owner, CEO, whatever, go first. And I will talk with him or her ahead of time and prep it and prepare that person to really share from their heart. And most times they'll say to me, I have never shared my story with anyone, not even my family. And so what that has done, Nikki, over the years is that has created a sense of humanness. It makes you human. And many times leaders are viewed as being untouchable, as being non-human almost, like we never fail, we never screw up, we never have fears, we never have doubts. And it's just not true. And when we share, when we're willing to be vulnerable and take off the mask for a minute, let people see our heart, what I have found over the years is that creates a bond and it creates a commitment and loyalty in ways that nothing else that you can almost do, because that is, it's so powerful.
There's a reason why so many movies have been made over the overcomer story, because it's this journey that people can connect with because it wasn't an easy road and it inspires people. It's an awesome thing. So thank you. Wasn't really planning on touching on that today, but power in sharing your story and just encouraging you to share yours as listeners. So good. So Matt, back to schedule. Later in your leadership journey, as you met with leaders and business owners, you saw that there was that same desperation. It was just a consistent thing. You were seeing lots of people being overwhelmed and you just continued to have a nudge. You were like, I just get this constant nudge to be part of the change. Talk about that journey.
I'll give a little bit of context, then I'll answer your question. So the context is we started our family business over. It grew, just took off. After 12 years later, I sold it. We had reached a point where I had to make some huge decisions on if we're going to continue to try to grow this thing or sell it. I had a wonderful competitor that took good care of our people. So there's that. I then went into private equity and literally spent the next 12 years traveling the world and meeting with leaders. And what I was looking for were opportunities to invest. But we didn't just, the firm that I worked with, it was actually a mentor of mine that helped me restart my business. We had a different approach. We had a very relational approach. We had an impact approach, an influence approach. So we weren't just looking for investment opportunities. We were looking for opportunities to impact people's lives. And so when I sit down with an owner of a business or CEO, whatever it might be, is usually the owner because they were normally family businesses, I would ask just a question. I'd ask them, tell me your story. And so they would tell me their story. And then I would usually follow up with, why do you want to sell your business? And this is where it would, the combination of sharing their story and asking them why they want to sell their business usually led to this conversation. They would say, I've spent my life building this thing. Right? This thing being the business that I thought would give me happiness, satisfaction, joy, contentment, purpose, whatever words you want to put around that. And instead, what it's done is I've had to sacrifice so much along the way that I don't even want this thing anymore. And when they say sacrifice along the way, what they usually meant was they sacrificed their marriages and their kids. Many of them were either on second, third marriages, not married. If they were still married to their original spouse, they were like living separate lives. Their kids, many times they were estranged from their kids. Sometimes they even met grandkids, and on and on. And so I heard this story not once, twice. I heard it 100 times. And so I just started keeping a journal of my conversations. And that's what led to me writing my first book, Unsatisfied, When Less Is More. Because realizing that this so-called dream that we're chasing is like grasping sand. Because if we have to sacrifice everything that we say is important to us along the journey, what are we doing? Because it's not going to lead to lasting satisfaction and joy and purpose. And so my first book really is a recalibration on that, and really to say, how do you pursue a flourishing life? And which is written more to individuals, that led to the second book, which just came out in October, called Unengaged, Building Flourishing Organizations. And that one is written to leaders of organizations, to how do you take the principles, the foundation that was established in the first book, and apply it to organizational life.
So I want you to summarize just the journey from book one to book two. And, you know, what you knew that you had to do in book two that wasn't in book one, because they're related, right? To really give the full picture. Like, what was that like nudge that was just like, I have to do this?
Great question. And it was really, when I was writing the first book, I cannot tell you how many times. First of all, it was a real process to get to actually writing the first book. It was something I had thought about for a decade, planned for 5 years, and it took me 3 years to get it done. But as I was writing it, literally, probably about 20% of the way in, I started having this dialogue and with myself and with God, and basically saying, this is not the book that I want to write. And yet I was compelled to write. It's like, just keep writing, keep writing. When I got to the end of the book, I'm like, this is not the book I wanted to write. I wanted to write a book to leaders about leadership and about building organizations, basically restoring humanity to organizations and combating a lot of the things that I saw working in organizations, for organizations. And so when I finished the first book, toward the end of it, literally, it was like, I don't want to, you know, I don't know, call it an epiphany, call it whatever. I had the idea for the second book, and it was as clear as day. And it was these three pillars of empathy, empowerment, and excellence, because it fits right on top of, if you want to build a flourishing life, you have to build it intentionally. And the same applies to organizations. And so while the two books are separate, and you can definitely read them separately, you don't need to read the first to read the second. It'd be great if you did, but they are related. But in the second book, I made it separate enough that you don't have to read the first one. So, but it really expands on. So it just really became a compelling thing for me that I need to keep writing.
So another just pop-up side conversation here that could be a totally separate episode. The power of surrender to what is truly our calling and our purpose, right? So I have this tattoo on my arm. I don't know if you can see it. Oh, it's too fuzzy, but it says be a vessel. And I learned that in a way that would be very tied to your entry of this conversation and this whole concept of when we write a book to write the book to write the book versus we write the book because of the outcome, the thing that we are being guided to do on earth, it's such a different thing. Like I just got off an episode about check the box versus impact, and there's similarity here. And this is, you know, along the lines of true purpose, you know, an intention to do the things because the meaning, and this goes back to like, why are we unfulfilled and why are we overwhelmed? Because it's missing the like core of, you know, what we're here for. And so I know this is that's a whole nother thing. Maybe start a podcast on that.
Here's the thing though. So I, towards my end of my run in corporate, my life just stopped working, and there's many reasons why, but there's many reasons I didn't understand why. Over the last 5 years, I've been on this journey, and really it's a journey of surrender and a journey of, okay, I'm going to stop just doing my natural, like you as well. My natural is just to jump in and do, and not actually stop and think about, okay, wait a minute. Why am I here? What is my purpose? Why did God have me at this time on this earth, at this time in history, in this country, in this setting? So I've been really a soul search for 5 years and saying, okay, God, I'm going to step back and I'm going to surrender and let you guide and we'll figure this out. So I've often joked that what I'm doing now, I'm making less money than I've ever made in my career, and I have more joy, more purpose, more satisfaction than I've ever had.
Well, we can just basically mic drop right there, but we haven't even got to the three pillars.
Sorry.
So let's dig into these three pillars of a flourishing organization. So first of all, when you go into share like these three, you kind of talked about how those three came to be, but give that a little bit again, like how those three, I think it was very clear for you, what are the three, and kind of talk through and define them.
Empathy is the first, empowerment is the second, and excellence is the third. Empathy is really all about understanding you and understanding those you lead, top to bottom in the organization. I believe that this applies to every level of every organization, because at our core as human beings, we're human beings, not human doings. And we want to be known, and we want to be understood, and we want to be listened to. You know, everybody, I don't care if it's entry level, I don't care if you have no education, if you have all the way up to a PhD or even post PhD work, I don't care. We all have the same basic need to be known. And we forget, I've just seen it over and over and over again, organizations forget that because they get so focused on the goal and the bottom line and this and this and this. Yeah, a lot of organizations have very nice pithy vision statements and values. I want to make sure that, okay, I love your vision statement, I love your values. Are they practiced values or just aspired to? If they're practiced, wonderful. That means you're going to make certain sacrifices along the way. And are you really doing that? So that's empathy is about restoring humanity to organizations. So two, the second is empowerment. And really it comes down to let's let people do the job we hired them to do rather than bringing them in and saying, oh, wait, don't do it that way. Do it this way. Oh, why are you doing it that way? Do it my way. And we don't effectively delegate. And then we wonder why people aren't engaged in their, and that's where I came with the title for the book, Unengaged, because there has been so many studies done. We read about it all every day. High turnover, low engagement. Well, if I'm hired to do a job and then you quickly start saying, don't do it that way, do it this way, don't do it this way, do it that way. And yet I have experience, I have knowledge, I have maybe expertise, but now I have to do it a certain other way. I'm not going to have joy and purpose. I'm not going to feel like I'm contributing. That's the other thing too, when it comes to empowerment, you have to make sure that you're connecting the vision with what the people are doing top to bottom. So they understand the why. The why is more important than the what or the how. So that's empowerment. And then third, excellence. So it's having this unwavering commitment to doing the best that we can do every single day, the very best that we can do 24/7, 365, or in this year, 366. And making sure that everybody understands we're all rowing in the same direction, we're about this, and we're not going to waver in our commitment to excellence. And one more thing about the book, Nikki, both books actually, I didn't want to write a book that was just about good ideas, philosophy, and my meanderings throughout the book. I wanted to make it practical and applicable. And so each book is divided into three parts. The third part of each book is all application. If you want to build more empathy in your organization, this is how you do it. You want to build more empowerment, this is how you do it. Excellence, this is how you do it.
I love that from a tactical, like you're wired for that. We already shared that, like the doing. And so that's very actionable. That's great. And we'll link out to the book in the show notes as well, both books. So let's do a little bit of tactical here to kind of tease that out. When it comes to empathy, empowerment, and excellence, let's give an example in each category about a story that you have, a client, a time that you were working inside of an organization and you saw a fellow leader or whatever, illustrate it well. An example of illustrating it that you've walked alongside, you've seen it happen. Yeah, what does great look like? Empathy, empowerment, excellence.
So one example, and I can probably give you many from each. I'll try to think of the best one from each off the top of my head. Empathy, that one's easy. So working with a fairly medium-sized organization, I think they had a couple hundred employees. And the CEO second-generation family business, had taken over, and he was just completely overwhelmed. And he didn't know how to, he didn't know how to lead. He was not really taught the business well. He wasn't, especially not taught leadership well. So I came in. And the first thing I did was I got their team together. We were actually offsite this time. And there were five people on the senior team. And we spent half a day together. And literally, I just said, other things planned. All we got done in that first day, half day, was people sharing their stories. And in this case, the CEO did not go first. He just insisted that he not go first. And I said, okay, I don't normally do it that way. And he looked at me and says, I want you to go first. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he knew my story. I had shared it. I had heard me speak or something. I can't remember what it was. But anyway, he knew enough of my story. He wanted me to share it. So I did. And then each person went around the room. And Nikki, by the time the CEO shared, he was a wreck. Emotionally, he was a wreck in a very, very good way. And then he shared. And by the end of that time, you know, I was working. I mean, these are, you know, high power people. There were both male and female in the room. And there were tears. There were hugs. There was, and at the end of that time, I think each person came up to me at some point while the time I was there. I think we had a total of 2 days, came up to me and said, I've never experienced anything like that in my life. I didn't know this about these people. I worked with that person for 20 years, that person for 15 years, that person for 10. I knew nothing about that. And so now it's been, oh man, a year and a half, I think. That team has gelled. It's starting to trickle down through the organization. They're having other teams do that as well. And it's been an amazing thing just to sit back and watch. Now, I have a front row seat to it, but to see the level of understanding, their turnover has, I'm not going to say it's zero because it's not zero, but it is way less than they had. It was less than half of what they had. And their level of engagement has gone through the roof. They now have succession plans in place. They have people that now have approached me and said, I'm never leaving this place. This place is awesome. So those are the kind of stories that you live for as a consultant, especially. So
absolutely. Yeah. Quick disclaimer. Anytime you bring Matt Lesser into your life to do anything deep dive, bring the Kleenex. So there's that. And then on the other side,
and it's a good thing.
Yeah.
It's
and the good thing, like the good right. tears. So it's yeah. Tears that are just meaningful, right? It's meaningful stuff, like transformational stuff. So the other side is like, that CEO was super strategic with how he teed you up first. Brilliant. You know what I mean? Like he knew that you have such a deep story. All stories have impact. Everyone's story. Sometimes for influence purposes, you want to start with the story, just like, you know, if you have a program, you're going to a play, you know, you open with like, you know, an opener that gets people connected, or, you know, the way that a movie starts. And so just thinking about, you know, how we position those different stories to be able to help other people then want to really share, all stories are valuable. So very strategic there. That's awesome. Can you walk us into an example of empowerment? One of those like favorite examples.
Yep, sure. Another client, smaller organization, and they were having a terrible time with turnover. They just could not figure at the middle management level. And so they had a handful of them, and they were trying, they're really experiencing rapid growth. But they would bring people in into these middle management, middle leadership positions, and they would just turn them over almost immediately. And they just could not figure out why. So there was a CEO, there was a CFO, and there was a COO, I think. So three people on the senior leadership team. And so they basically just said, come in and just observe, tell us what you think. So I just started interviewing people that were there. And I actually got to be able to interview a couple people that had left. And in the process of doing that, I found out that basically nobody felt like they could do anything except the rote way to do it. And if they stepped outside of these bounds, then they got in trouble, they got yelled at, and it was basically, there was no room. And decision-making only happened at the top. All decisions were made at the top, even small ones that I'm like, what? You had to get permission for that? And so we worked very, 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 very intentionally at delegation. And so we worked through, okay, this is how you, literally went through a multi-stage training in how do you appropriately delegate? How do you appropriately empower people? How do you make sure that they have the tools, the resources, the knowledge, the abilities? Because if they have the tools, the resources, the knowledge, the abilities, and the attitude to do their job well, but then we don't actually let them do it, of course they're not going to stay. You know, because they feel like their hands are just completely tied. And so then we started establishing, okay, listen, especially when it came to money type decisions, okay, listen, CEO, you don't need to make decisions for every single penny that's spent in this place. Let's put together boundaries, and then we'll communicate those boundaries at each level. And we just did this one step at a time, gradually, because there's a great visual tool. It's called the growth and control dichotomy. And it's very simple. I show this graphic a lot, and it's two arrows, growth and control. If you want to increase growth, you have to decrease control. You want to keep control, you're going to decrease growth. it's an inverse relationship. And so if an organization is growing and they're not giving up control and they're not sharing power and authority, then they're not going to continue to grow. It's just not going to happen.
That's really good. Decrease control to increase growth. Good challenge for all of us. That's a fabulous takeaway. Thank you. So we might do excellence just a little different unless you, so I was going to kick off with something and just see how you take this, if that's okay. And then if you have an awesome story, you can chime in on that too. So excellence, one of the things that we say, it's one of our core values at People Forward Network, my company. And one of the things that we constantly reiterate is excellence is different every day, every moment. It's us giving our best at any given time. Different days are different, right? Like you have family life in the morning and something happens and it's just thrown off because the kid missed the bus and now you're just off schedule. The way that you're showing up to a meeting in the car driving, you had to Zoom in because this wasn't planned, right? You're doing your very best to be there in that moment on Zoom. Totally, we're planning to be there early, get your papers together and all this. And then the whole like surrender to what is and show up as your best, like with emotional intelligence skills, right? I think that has to be practiced to be, how do I just be my best right now, no matter, you know, what that situation is. The thought there is excellence is not perfection. Excellence is we're human and it's different all the time. And how do we stay centered to just be our best, give grace, you know? And so that's a rant, but I'm just curious where that ties in with your thoughts.
I'm a big believer that excellence, that perfection can be the enemy of excellence because they don't go, they're not the same, not even close to the same. In theory, I agree with everything you just said. And especially when it comes to individuals, you're right. Sometimes you have a bad day. And even in your bad day, you can still give your best. And so, and what does that look like? It may mean that today my best is 80%. Okay, fine. Give your 80%. If it's 80% every day, then we need to have a conversation. But whatever it is today, give your best. And from an organization's perspective, it's making sure you have the structures, the framework, and you have the alignment top to bottom from your mission, your purpose, your vision, and your values, and making sure that that is communicated, it's known, and it's practiced. One quick story, a client that I had a few years ago, walk in, mission statement on the wall, value statements on the wall, scripture verses on the wall, lots of different things that communicate who we are. After spending time with them, I realized their values are not practiced, they're aspired. And so just through interviews, talking with different people. And so it finally came to my final report to the CEO was, I think you should change the values on your wall. And he said, why is that? And I said, because they're not practice values, they're aspired values. And I said, if you want to communicate excellence to your organization, communicate what you actually do. Don't communicate what you aspire to and then have all these inconsistencies running through the organization, because then what winds up happening is if you have inconsistencies here, you're going to have them there, you're going to have them there. And before you know it, you're going to start cutting corners, you're going to start compromising on quality, and it will cost you. And it was costing them. And he actually listened and he changed the values of the wall, and the company started to see some big time changes in quality control and attitudes, because it's like, oh, wait a minute. People do actually listen around here. They had a different tune from their forward.
That's so good. Are your values practiced or aspired? That's good. That's a great reflection question. Matt, you're laying it on us today. Can you bring us home with one thing that must be at play to make all of this come to life? If we were to say the one thing.
Humility. If you're not teachable and coachable, and if you don't realize that life is bigger than you, then it's very difficult to work with that. It's the one thing that I look for whenever I work with any leader. If they're not teachable, coachable, if they think that the center of the world revolves around them, you know, I don't turn down much work because I like work. But if I come into that, I'll say, you know, I don't think I'm your guy, but I can refer you to a couple of other people that I think may be able to help you.
Oh, so good. Goes right back to my very first point that we'll be sharing in our Truth You Can Act On, which is we cannot do this alone. We need God and we need people. So really good. All right. Awesome. Matt, this has been so great. I think we came up with like 5 topics that we might have you back for. So we'll have to figure that out. So Matt, this is kind of like fast response, like want to just like learn a little bit about you. We always start with this first question because we have this like ever-growing list that everyone gets to contribute to. What's your favorite book of all time or favorite recent read?
favorite book of all time is the Bible. And I read that daily for wisdom and for reflection. As far as a recent read, it isn't fairly recent. And that book list actually changes because I have new favorites as I read. But one that I recommend every leader read at some point in his or her career is Leadership and Self-Deception by the Arbinger Group.
Okay, Matt, what's a hobby that you do that at face value, most people might not guess that's your hobby?
People that don't know me don't realize that I absolutely love cooking. And the more eclectic and foreign that it is, I love a challenge. I also love anything to do with meat. So there's that. So that's really American. But I love challenging myself with really different dishes.
Okay. So biggest challenge that you ever took on to cook?
Several years ago, my kids got me a cookbook, an African cookbook. I think it was from the country of Senegal. And so one time I tried this like a 4-course meal and used all the cookbook. It took me, I think, 2 days to cook it all. I botched most of it. I think most of it went in the trash, but it was, I can't tell you how much fun I had. So
that's awesome. So speaking of, you know, ethnic cooking and various experiences, what version of world traveler are you?
So it seems like a past life now, but I used to travel very often to Africa. In fact, I've been there 27 times, but who's counting? When I was in private equity, we had a business in Tanzania. And so I would travel often through Europe, had a lot of connections in Europe as well. And then to Africa, spent most of my time in Tanzania, but I've been to, I think 13 or 14 other, maybe 15 now, I don't know, other countries in Africa that I spent time in. So I absolutely love the African continent, love the people, and love my time there.
And Matt, what is the best way for our listeners to connect with you after the show?
Website is www.uniquelynormal.com. And email is matt@uniquelynormal.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, and you can find links on my website or links to both books if you're interested in that as well.
Thank you, Matt Lesser, for joining Gut Plus Science. I loved learning about the three pillars of a flourishing organization and your story. And here's my truth you can act on. Number one, Matt's big reveal or revelation is we can't do this alone. We need God and we need people. Number two, share your story. Wow, what a story that Matt opened up with and the power of connection through that story. And just it reminded me how important it is that I'm sharing my story to connect with people. And each and every one of us has a story or many that you can share to connect with your audience. Number three, reflect on how does purpose-driven leadership show up for me? How can I be more purpose-driven in my leadership? Number four, empathy is restoring humanity inside of organizations. I love that comment from Matt, and it just encourages all of us to think, how am I restoring humanity in my organization, bringing empathy to the table? Empowerment is trust and delegating and trusting, and it's decreasing our control and increasing our growth. So when we decrease control, it increases growth, and empowerment is so key. We have to trust, and we delegate things, and we trust again, and we keep watching our people grow around us. Excellence is doing the best we can at all times, and it's different each day, each hour. So excellence is doing our very best at any given time. And I love this final point that our values, we hear so many times, you know, it's on a website or it's on a wall in a workplace. And Matt told a story about this. Are they practiced or are they aspired? Really made me think. It's a great reflection question. Are the values on your wall practiced or are they aspired? We need to be practicing our values. And if those values that are on the wall aren't practiced, they are aspired, maybe we should change the values or change how you're showing up. Really, really good challenge. Thanks so much, Matt. We'll love to have you back in the future. We just left the world a little bit better. Now, go do something with it.